Time gap, he's Jules. No, not Jules. Hey, look, it's Don Hutchinson. How about that? Blue skies over West London.
That's
after
Jules.
Jules must be on holiday again. We had a rainy, stormy weekend, but it was blue skies are coming back out. Blue skies in your hometown of Newcastle. We'll be talking about that because it's a huge win for them away to Spurs. We'll be talking about Napoli, talking about blue skies. L'Azzurro del Cielo, unbelievable win for them. Unbelievable Victor Osimhen. All of that is coming up. But let's start there. Let's start way in North London.
Yeah.
Spurs against Newcastle. Spurs, I think, had won every single league game at home this season. They had a bunch of injuries and absentees. They're looking ahead. It's Richarlison out. It's Kulusevski out. There was no Romero.
Bit of whinging. Bit of Conte whinging.
A bit about the depth of the squad and whatever. Yeah. I'm assuming you're not buying those excuses.
No, how can you whinge about the depth of the squad and feeling a little bit tired when Bruno Guimarães had a baby 2 days ago and he said after the game, "I've not slept for 2 days." And put that type of performance in. I thought Newcastle, Gab, take my Newcastle hat off. I thought they were magnificent. Considering they got battered 5-1 the season before, and whenever Newcastle travel to London throughout the years, it's never a happy place for Newcastle to go. So as wins go, I thought that was a statement win from Eddie Howe's men.
So this was more Newcastle. Newcastle being good, or was it more Spurs being deficient?
Both.
Because when Spurs lost to United in midweek, I thought United were phenomenal. Yeah. I did not think there was that much wrong with Tottenham.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes both things can be true. You can play well and...
But don't you think that result was coming? Don't you think that result was coming? They've done it against Arsenal. First 5 minutes, first 15 minutes, they went really defensive, really deep. And you think, what are you doing? North London derby. Done the same against Chelsea. Got lucky. Last minute equaliser. Don't you think this defensive approach is going to catch up to you at some point? I do.
Is that the defensive approach? Because I would point out, and Conte pointed this out, I thought for the first 15, 20 minutes... Tottenham actually played pretty well. They were on the front foot.
Yeah, Son had a couple of chances, didn't he?
Yeah. And then you have that incident with the goalkeeper. I'm going to assume that...
Legal.
That you're going to say 101, not a foul.
How does anyone ever think that's a foul? Do you? Is it not just two players coming together?
I love that term. That's an English term.
No, it's not.
It doesn't exist in any other language in the world.
There's 22 footballers on a pitch. At some point, there's going to be a little bit of bodily contact coming together.
I think so. Look, I don't have a problem with letting that goal stand. And it's also because, ultimately, Hugo Lloris, you were stupid. You screwed that one up. Yeah. You're normally reliable, though, you know, not the best with your feet, but you are a phenomenal keeper and a leader. You made a huge mistake, right?
And he knew it.
I do think that with a different referee... I think for me, the fact that Wilson's arms go out, which I think is kind of weird. I can understand if you... A different referee might have been prompted
to... If you take the biomechanics into consideration,
yes.
If me and you were to get up now and run into each other, there's no way your arms are going to be by your chest or by your side. We're going to do something to try and protect ourselves.
Yeah, most likely I would put my arms in front of me to protect myself from running into you. Yeah. I wouldn't have them round the side.
But then someone might say, you've pushed me. So I just think when you spin it all, I just think Lloris is in no man's land.
I thought it was the correct decision.
Yeah.
I thought Lloris was at fault for the second goal as well. We're going to get into more on Spurs a little bit later, but tell me about Newcastle because we're going to get into this a lot more later, but just briefly, they're in the top four now.
Mm-hmm.
We've spun this image of Newcastle as a club because of the money from the public investment fund of the sovereign wealth fund of Saudi Arabia, that they can buy everybody. They have spent, big, but they haven't spent out of this world.
Don't
this
be is ludicrous,
not
is it?
A Man City
no.
situation. One of the guys they spent a lot of money on, Alexander Isak, has hardly played.
Yeah.
What we're seeing, I think, is people like Joe Linton, people like Almiron, people like freaking Longstaff, contributing at a very high level when they weren't doing that before. Yeah. So logic to me says that's on the manager, that's on Eddie Howe.
100%. There's lots of things to take into consideration, Gab. And it baffles me how Mike Ashley never got Newcastle United and he never got the support. And what I mean by that is he didn't understand how amazing the Newcastle fans are. And he come out and said, "Oh, we're not interested in a cup run. We don't want to win a trophy. It's all about finishing fourth bottom." Put the whole mood on Tyneside lower, especially on Newcastle. Put it low. Fans were turning up to games, not particularly optimistic, not loving the football. Anyway, he goes, Steve Bruce goes, you get a young manager in who wants to play attacking football. All of a sudden, the fans are coming in the stadium. They can sense it. They can feel it. It's a great place to go and play. Newcastle's a great place to live. It's football-centric. It's mad on the football. So they go there. They've employed a company called War Flags, which is flags everywhere around the ground. It's a great place to go. The signings have been good. Trippier's come in. Didn't want to close in his contract. If he goes down, he can leave.
I'll leave you with this, because percentage chance the Newcastle finish top four. I know you love your percentages.
I do. I don't think it'll happen, Gab. I don't think it'll happen. I think if you offer Newcastle fans and myself now 7th, we'd take it.
So less than 50%.
I think so, mate, yeah.
I knew. I'm not blaming you for it.
You are?
Well, no. I don't even know what's coming,
and you're blaming me.
I'm going to point something out. This is especially geared towards our listeners who might not be in England, might not be that familiar with English football culture. But essentially,
yeah.
And I'm being very, very rough here. If you were to split England into, let's say, 4 bits.
Yeah.
You would have London in the southeast. You would have the northwest, which would include Manchester and Liverpool, obviously a big hotbed of football. Mm. You would have the Midlands, which is those clubs around Birmingham, like Wolves, like Aston Villa, yeah. Derby, Leicester. And then you would have the northeast. And because of the geography of the country, because the major motorways sort of connect London to Manchester through the Midlands, the railway lines and everything, the Northeast is kind of, I feel like it's kind of separate in some ways, not so much culturally, but whatever, from the rest of the country. And so because the big media organizations are in London and Manchester, sometimes when you're kind of in the provinces, you slightly get short shrift. And again, feel free, you can jump in.
What are you getting at?
What I'm getting at is when Newcastle as a club are presented in the media, right? There's two or three tropes, right? One trope, oh, look, St. James Park is fantastic. In the middle of time, they're all football mad.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. It's true. They're football mad in other cities too, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But they're very passionate, right?
Yeah.
So all they talk about is the passion of the fans, which is true.
Yeah.
But like, I kind of often feel like people don't get into more than that. Oh, Shears from Newcastle, and he turned down United to go back. They're fine. Great, right? Now, obviously, the Saudi... Oh, nobody likes Ashley, and that now becomes the Saudi thing and public investment fund and whatever. And, oh, they have loads of money, right?
Mm.
But there's more to it than that. I kind of feel Newcastle sometimes get the raw... They get the short end of the stick when they're described.
People probably don't delve into the history of the football club. Probably that's why.
Well... But I'm not sure they even delve into the present. So what I want to do now, in the next few minutes, I want to understand from you, what does Newcastle do well football-wise? What makes this a good team? I want to go through the team because, look, I'm making excuses for it, right? We often talk about the Big Six. We talk about the Big Six on the show. We try to talk about them all the time. In fact, is Newcastle are fourth in the table right now. So I want to understand, without talking about how brilliant the fans are, they're brilliant, great. And I'm sorry, I know you brought up War Flags. You got it out of your seat. Yeah, I know, but you know what? Uh-huh. It's the same fans who were there before, and I know they got a lift, now they didn't. Fans are important, but they can't turn a mediocre team into a good one.
They can't, but they can turn an atmosphere, can't they? They can turn an atmosphere anywhere, toxic.
They can turn it toxic. Now, in this case, obviously, that's not what's happening. No, so,
but they can also be an asset.
So walk me through Newcastle, right? I'm a big Nick Pope guy. I think he's possibly the best English keeper.
Solid.
You can debate it with Ramsdale. I would have him ahead of Pickford. You might not. Yeah. I also tend to like tall goalkeepers. Obviously, they didn't have a bad goalkeeper before, but he's been an upgrade.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's added value.
Yeah.
At the back, they got Sven Botman, who's done brilliant very well. Char's...
Improved chair. Eddie Howe's improved him.
Can you talk about that? Because, correct my assessment of chair. You had a center back who was quite comfortable on the ball, I thought.
Yeah.
But sometimes would get a little bit bullied and stuff and not always make the right decisions and get under pressure.
Yeah.
What has Eddie Howe done with him?
So the relationship between Fabian Scher and Sven Botman is super quick, as you know. So then Fabian Scher can get really tight to defenders, which suits him. Sometimes he likes to sit off and get on the ball because he can play, but his main asset is getting tight. And he can get sometimes in front of centre-forwards, or he can get super tight from behind, knowing if the centre-forward rolls him, He's got Sven Botman behind him. He's got Kieran Trippier to his right-hand side. He's got Dan Burn, who's a brilliant centre-half, playing out of his skin at left-back. Matt Target can't get in the side. So the Eddie Howe factor, it's improving the players. People can always sort of say, well, yeah, but he's had money to spend. He's had money to spend. So what? You've got to spend it wisely.
Yeah, no. I think that's a very simplistic attitude. Because, again, they've spent a lot of money. Isak hasn't contributed. A big chunk of it was on that. You know, we've seen in recent years, we've seen teams like Villa spend a lot of money. We've seen Leicester spend a lot of money. So it's not going to be an instant upgrade.
Don't you feel as though the signing of Bruno Guimarães?
Well, I want to get to Guimarães, but I need your help. You need you to help explain the defense a little bit more, right? Trippier, I feel Trippier is a little bit one-dimensional. Leader. What he does is very good, though, and he brings a lot of leadership skills. I think the way Newcastle set up, whatever defensive failings he has, and I think he does.
Best defensive record in the league so far.
Well, that's fine. But the people around him, Howe's done a good job, I think, making sure Trippier isn't exposed. Isn't. Dan Burn on the other side is not something I understand. I didn't understand him before. And not because he's bad, but simply because when you are that tall.
See, I knew you were going to bring the height into it. Why can't you be 6'5" and be a good left back?
I think he's even taller than that.
Is he? Well, all right.
Probably
on the eye, it's not conventional, is it?
So the average, the basic region is simply one of biomechanics, right?
Yeah.
When you are that tall and you're up against small wingers, it's harder for you to have the quickness and the lateral movement because you're further away from the ground.
But that's when you do have a football brain, not to get too tight to someone. If you're playing against Bernardo Silva, for example, who's playing on that right-hand side for Man City, you ain't going to show him inside. You will show him inside because you show him into traffic, but you wouldn't want to get done, so you might be a little bit narrow. So there's the coaching from Eddie Howe. Dan Burn gets narrow to Sven
Botman. Well, he had good coaching before at his previous club as well, because obviously he's played in that kind of role before. Yeah. But it is pretty... I remember Dan Burn at Fulham he's been around the block a little bit. I think it was the year that... I think it was Moyes at United when he was playing center back in that game, and United were just under Moyes were just pumping balls into the box. Yeah. I think he had like 74 headers or something stupid like that.
Yeah.
All of it, right? But this is a different position he's playing. It's a different role. Can you talk about what does that bring to Newcastle?
Well, what it brings, I tell you what, he's better on the ball than people think. You know, just because he's 6'7" or wherever he is, he's
tight on the ball.
But he brings a presence, Gab. If you've got. Say Kieran Tripp is on the right-hand side, because all these systems always fascinate me when someone says, it's a flat back four, which it is when you haven't got the ball. As soon as you've got the ball, the game will never change if you're all playing a four. It always turns into a three.
Right.
So Dan Burn comes in one, Sven Botman goes across one, Cher goes across one, turns into three, because Trippier's attacking down the right-hand side.
And it's usually that. It's not often that Trippier is the guy who tucks into it because
sometimes
Dan Burn is romping
sometimes,
up the wing.
But very rarely.
Right.
That's why you see a lot of attacks for Newcastle predominantly down the right hand side. So it's work. It's time on the training ground. It's the message from the manager, and it's also the player understanding what he's good and what he's bad at. Dan Burn doesn't want to get sucked into Bernardo Silva getting 1v1s, does he? He wants to give him a yard.
All right. Run me through the midfield. Bruno Guimarães.
How we've got him, I've got no idea.
I think he's one of the top 10 all-around midfielders in the world, right?
It throws back to me when Kevin Keegan was the manager and he was signing people like Tino Asprilla, and you get people like Ginola through the door, and you get this superstar player that's just got stardust. And honestly, Gab, we talk about the fans. They absolutely adore him. My brother was sending me messages.
You was going to go back to the fans.
Gab, I can show you on my phone. My brother sending me messages from inside Tottenham yesterday singing Bruno songs. They adore him.
Okay.
And as a player, I mean, how we've got him, I'll never know.
The guys with him, on paper, Bruno Guimarães was a star in Ligue 1. He's a Brazilian international. The guys with him, frankly, you don't get excited. I don't get excited when I hear the names like Longstaff, whichever one of the two it is.
But again,
or
proven
Willick,
players. Willick, Murphy, Joe Linton.
Right. So did they get better under Howe?
Yes.
And how good are they? Or have they hit their ceiling? Can they get even better than this?
I mean, they've probably hit the ceiling if you want to try and stick a label on it, because they're playing out of their skins and Newcastle sitting in fourth. Individually, you can always improve. But it's again, you can play under manager's gab where you get so much more from a manager when a manager loves you and a manager trains you right and a manager treats you right as well. And I think that's what I'm seeing. I don't know for a fact what Eddie Howe is like as a coach. I've worked with him once or twice in the media. and he's one of these guys where you'd love to play for him. So I can imagine he's very, very positive.
Yeah, I think some people...
If you had a bad game, he wouldn't be too down on you.
I think some people click with him. Some people don't.
That's life as
a lot of it is... I mean, certainly at Bournemouth, he was very big in giving players instructions so that things would come natural to them.
Yeah.
And almost wouldn't think. Like, you know, when you receive the ball in a certain area, you know that this guy's already making a run there and whatever.
Yeah.
So you almost kind of you win yourself, you know, a split second where you don't have to think or look.
Yeah.
Because you know he's going to do that. And he's very good at building that trust. Almiron is another one who... It's funny, though, because when I look on paper, look at the way this team's built, and obviously we haven't mentioned Alan Saint-Maximin, who's injured right now, who's in the mix, who maybe in terms of technical ability may be the most skillful guy in the club, right?
And he's got it all on to get back in the side, because he was a shoo-in a year ago, wasn't he? It was like, pick Saint-Maximin.
Well, presumably when he's back, he's straight back into the side.
I don't think so.
It's interesting.
Even though how good he is.
He doesn't seem to be an Eddie Howe type player in the sense that, you know, the guy who's totally unpredictable and goes off and kind of does his own thing, right? Yeah. You would presumably prefer somebody like...
See, that's where I see, I think, the effect of Eddie Howe, what he's actually doing to Saint-Maximin. He's saying to you, we can't carry you anymore. You can play like you did against Man City and rip Man City apart, St. James's Park. But when we really need you, you can't just be this maverick who stands up the pitch and we go down to, you know, right. we're a man less and we're carrying a passenger. So again, I think it's a message where he's saying to the player, look, you know, you've got to do the other side of it. That's why I think he's got it on to get back in the side, how talented he is.
Almiron is another one. I think I was shocked that it's already 5 years that he's been there. Obviously, he was a massive star in MLS. He's a very athletic player, very quick player. Also gives you work defensively. I did feel like he kind of never went to the level.
No.
And then, of course, yesterday he scores that.
I don't think he was trusted, Gap. I think people looked at Almiron and thought, you know what? He's a head down. He'll run as fast as he can. He'll try hard. And that's about it. But no one really trusted him until Eddie Howe to actually look at the ability that he's got. I mean, I watched him against Tottenham yesterday. He was phenomenal. He ripped Longley apart, Sessegnon on that side. So again, it's another factor what Eddie Howe's done to a player. I mean, lovely little stat when Jack Grealish ripped him in the summer when he was singing. He's now scored more goals than Jack Grealish's career at City. Almiron. It's an amazing stat.
Oh, trolling Jack Grealish now, are we?
Absolutely.
All right. Callum Wilson, I think he's a very technically gifted center forward. I think without those horrendous injuries that he suffered at different times would have worked out. I wonder, again... And here we get into transfers and spending, right? From the club's perspective, and I say this in the nicest possible way, but you've got Wilson there. One of the first guys Eddie Howe signed when he took over was we brought in Chris Wood, different profile of center forward.
Just to keep you up.
But then in the summer, you go and you bring in Isak. Mm-hmm. If I'm Callum Wilson at that stage, I'm thinking, all right, this guy doesn't really trust me, right? Because you've bet the house on this guy who's younger than me.
Yeah.
Chris Wood is still hanging around. You know, when he came in, he signed Chris Wood. He's only said, oh, look, Callum will keep us up, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And yet, he responds with a tremendous performance like this.
Yeah.
So is that one of the challenges? Sometimes you use competition for motivation rather than saying, screw this.
Oh, well, if you're a player, Gab, you have to. I can remember Walter Smith pulling me in the office at Everton, and he got me in, he went, just to let you know, you can leave. And I went, why? And he went, I've signed John Collins. I've signed Olivier Decor. He went, you're not going to play. And I looked at him and I went, I'm better than them two. And he went, what? And I went, I'm better than John Collins. I'm better than Olivier Decor. And I walked out the room not knowing that day because I backed myself. I could have quite easily went, okay, Gaffer, I'll go. I didn't. I stayed because I backed myself. And Archie Knox, his number two, told me months and months later, he loved that response. And it took me about 2 or 3, 4 weeks to get back in the side. He ended up playing the three and played all three of us. You've got to back yourself as a player. You can't just quit.
I think a lot of players also say, like, the club are heavily invested in them. And this gets me to Eddie Howe and transfers, because I think when he was at Bournemouth, if you go back and you actually look at them, and obviously they got so much praise because he kept the same back four from League Two and he stayed in top flight forever. And when he did throw a lot of money at a player, I'm thinking of when he signed Jermaine Defoe to that insane contract to keep him up.
He took Solanke from Liverpool, Jordan Ibe.
Jordan Ibe, I think, was one of the big screw-ups. Solanke, I'm more of a calculated risk, but of course one that I guess it's kind of working out now years later. I wonder if this is something of the club saying, you know what, I don't, who do we trust? Eddie Howe, and we said, it's not Eddie Howe with the money. I hate when people say that, because obviously there's a director of football there who really knows what he's doing. But the attitude, club's attitude is more like, let's not create a problem for Eddie Howe by bringing in somebody super high profile who we really should build a team around because he's going to make us better. But that's going to take a process.
That's the fascination in the January window if Newcastle are sitting in fourth or fifth. What type of player they go for?
I think they're going to be super disciplined. And I think they're only going to go for guys. They're still going to go for the small steps because, and I've said this before, I think they're actually trying to run a business there.
Yeah.
They don't want to emulate what Man City, what Paris Saint-Germain did early on, saying like, let's go all guns blazing.
And always the subject that blows my mind is financial fair play. Blows my mind.
What?
Well, I just don't understand it. Because Newcastle are saying we've got to respect and live by the laws of financial fair play. But Chelsea can spend a quarter of a billion in the summer window.
Oh, no, no, no. It's funny.
I don't understand it.
It's funny.
And then Barca are doing what Barca are doing. It's like, financial what? Financial fair play?
It's really funny with, because some tall former Premier League midfielders seem to have an interest in financial fair play. Others, like Craig Burley, get angry when you bring it up.
I hate it, because no one understands it.
Okay, so, I'll have a long explainer coming up soon. But the long and short of it is, as far as the...
No, when I say I don't understand it, I understand it. I don't understand how people get around it. That's what I mean.
Right. Well, basically, we haven't had it for the last couple of years because of COVID. In Newcastle's case, as far as Europeans... financial fair play doesn't apply because they're not in Europe. So they're going to look at it differently when they do qualify for Europe, if they qualify for Europe. Barcelona's whole thing is predicated. Barcelona sold off big chunks of their club, right? So they have big amounts of revenue coming in. That's how they're able to do it this year anyway. What's the other one you mentioned? Chelsea,
quarter of a billion in the summer.
Just
a quarter of a bill.
No, and they spent a lot before. Chelsea, I'm not sure what they're planning. On the surface, unless there's something we don't know, they could have an issue. Also, remember that this season is the last season under the old financial fair play system. We'll be getting a new one in. A word on Tottenham, because we did this deep dive in Newcastle because I felt they deserved it.
Yeah.
You're concerned that Conte is being too defensive?
A little bit, yeah. It reminds me a little bit of Jose at Tottenham. The players will go along with defensive football when you're winning games. The problem is, when you stop winning games, do the players then still carry
on? So you're not buying this fact that it wasn't defensive football. It only became that once they went a goal down.
No, no. I do think it's defensive football because I think they've done it against Arsenal in the North London derby. They've done it against Chelsea.
Well, against Arsenal, I can understand.
Could you?
Arsenal away, they had...
To be beaten. It's a derby. And you sit back for 20 minutes and allow them to get on the front foot and allow them to attack you. Then you struggle. Done it against Chelsea, but got lucky, scored in the last minute. Done it against Man United.
I wonder if this is a game where they could use another passer in there, because it seems to me that once Newcastle go 2-0 up, obviously Newcastle are going to play on the counter to some degree, right? Which is, it's a logical thing to do.
Yeah.
And then when you have to unlock things, we know Harry Kane can do that. And in fact, he did do that.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got set pieces. Other than that, I don't know that Bentancur, Bissouma, and Skip are those types of players. I don't know that in the back three that played yesterday, you had anybody who can do that.
Yeah.
Or indeed, even if Romero had been fit, that's not really what he does.
But does he then play over number 10? Does he play over Christian Eriksen? Like, would he want?
He had Eriksen before. I don't know. I think he would rather.
I think that's the problem when Tottenham fans are watching the types of game they're watching and thinking, well, where's our man? Where's our Christian Eriksen? Where's our number 10? Who's going to provide the balls for Son, for Kane?
I don't think he anticipated having a situation where he'd be forced to play 3-5-2.
Yeah, Kulusevski's a miss.
Kulusevski and Richarlison, right? Either one of them's in there. You can do more things. You're more comfortable dropping Kane deeper to receive the ball. You can attack from different angles. I think that's what he wants to do with this setup.
I don't think it's the end of the world, but Tottenham fans are a little bit frustrated.
No. No question about it. I think the weather also played a part in the way that game unfolded. But obviously they need to sort things out in the Champions League as well. I think that has to be priority right now. Just make sure that you're going through.
It might just be a case, I think, for everyone leading it into the next three games before the World Cup is just rack up as many points as you can. And let's see where you're at after the World Cup.
All right, Newcastle. See, wait, maybe it's not. Maybe we should just be Big Six obsessed. Yeah. Maybe we need to start being Big Seven obsessed soon. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Newcastle, because I'm sorry, we got to move on to Napoli, because they win again, and this was a different win. This was away to Roma. This was a Mourinho against Spalletti. This was kind of a grind-it-out type of game, and they ground it out, and they win 1-0.
And my man, Osimhen. I love him, Gab. I love him.
I got my own catchphrase here, right? What do we say about Osimhen? The best
is yet
to come.
I love him. Is there anyone that plays the game like him? He's got a little bit of Haaland about him. He's a little bit chaos, but he's just... I adore watching him play.
I don't want him to ever remove the mask. I want him to keep playing. He plays his entire career with the mask. Like Edgar Davids with his glasses, right? Yeah. Like, I don't care if your nose is healed. Yeah. Like, just do it so you can then remove it. Look, it's a huge win. But this was cagey. I know you look at this and you say, oh, Roma didn't have a shot on target.
Yeah.
Jose, were he with us, he would say, well, what do you want? You know, I'm without Dybala and without Wijnaldum. And he's done such a great job of selling people on the fact you're without these two players.
Yeah.
What I would say is Wijnaldum, obviously feel really bad for him injured. Wijnaldum hasn't been Wijnaldum for a couple years now. So, yeah, you got him on a free from Paris Saint-Germain because they were keen to get rid of him.
Yeah.
I don't know what he would have contributed. Dybala, a different issue. But again, you knew when you signed him, you were getting somebody who has a horrendous injury record and who's up and down.
Yeah, same as Zaniolo, which I think he's an amazing player.
I thought Zaniolo was really, really good last night. I don't think it was... I thought last night, Jose did everything he could for his game plan.
Yeah.
You know, you have Zaniolo, Tammy, and Pellegrini kind of as a floating front three. Tammy had a poor game, in my opinion. He got Pellegrini to say, all right, you sit on Lobotka, who you know, is kind of the deep playmaker, right? For Napoli.
Yeah.
And that part worked. The problem is, at that stage, you're only out as Zaniolo, and he's not Haaland yet.
No. I think this season, I'm looking at Napoli, Gab. I don't know if you agree, and I think they're the real deal. I honestly do. I think when you're watching Insigne and Dries Mertens and the careers that they've had, it's very difficult to sit here and criticise them, but Father Time catches up to everyone. And I thought they were a little bit one-dimensional in terms of their pace, Napoli. Now, I think with Osimhen and obviously Kvaratskhelia, you just look at them,
And Chucky Lozano.
Amazing. Amazing. And Elias, when he comes off the bench, is like, he's dynamic and he's like, runs around, causes chaos. Lobotka, I think, has been one of the best midfield players in Serie A for quite a while.
I want to ask you a question about this, because it's the kind of question I love asking ex-pros about, right? So we in the media, and you know, you've got a foot in both camps, we love talking about the importance of experience and leadership, right?
Yeah.
I said this many times, when Napoli let Koulibaly, Insigne, and Dries Mertens go, they weren't just losing great players, they were also losing the three guys.
Iconic
players, and these are the leaders, they have the experience, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. They're so important in the dressing room or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But do we overrate that? Because, and I guarantee...
I don't.
I guarantee, well, because I guarantee you, if Napoli hit a speed bump, what's going to happen? People are going to complain about, oh, there's a lack of leaders on this team now that these guys left. You know, it's only Zielinski who's kind of has the gravitas, if you will. The others are too young or whatever. But do we sometimes overrate the importance of veteran leadership?
I don't. And I'll go off piece slightly. And when I seen the Liverpool team that played Forest, and I seen Carvalho, Curtis Jones and Harvey Elliott in the side and away from home, I then thought, this is a problem for Liverpool. Not because they're bad players, it's just because they're young and inexperienced, and obviously they lost the game. I think there's a lot to be said for experienced players.
Yeah, you're right.
I really do. In difficult situations, it's difficult to lean on a youngster and go and do it for me. There's very few youngsters that can, but when you're grinding and when you need something, you need the leaders and you need muscle memory. You need guys that have played hundreds of games that know what it's like playing a game against Roma away from home.
It's like Alan Hansen famously said, right? You win nothing with kids. And he was clearly proven right in the mid-90s when decrying United's future. Sorry, Alan, I'm cracking a joke. With regards to Roma, if you're Mourinho, you've built this tremendous relationship with the fans. You know, people said he took the gladiator approach. It was the right approach for this game, right? Mm-hmm. He made Napoli play the way he wanted them to play.
Yeah, it was quite an even game. I mean, I thought Napoli were just the better side in terms of how many chances they created, but they didn't create a million. It was a competitive game. Roma weren't outplayed and outclassed. It's not one of them. I mean, Jose, I'll tell you something different. I mean, he comes out with these Jose statements, didn't he? Oh, the best team lost.
Right.
And the poorest team won. And he comes out with his Joseisms. I thought it was quite an even game, but the difference was the man Osimhen.
Osimhen and Kvaratskhelia and Zielinski and Lobotka and Kim, non-stop entertainment. All right, enough Jose. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's do it.
Casemiro grabs an injury time equaliser for Manchester United away to Chelsea. Don, fair result?
It was, because it wasn't a good game, Gab.
Oh, I was there. It was a terrible game.
It was pants till about 80 minutes.
United were good in the first half. Kepa got the start again, made some big saves. Chelsea were terrible. 35 minutes in.
Made the change.
Graham Potter changes the system. Kukurea, who personally I don't need to
see
again.
Three games in a row he's took him off.
But address it, right? You don't have any. Wait, is it still a big stigma in football? Like, oh, look, you took when you get substituted in the first half?
No.
No, it's not.
I mean, as a player.
In your day, it would like.
In our day, it's like ridiculous. Like, you're undermining me, like, you've embarrassed me. I even think today it's an unwritten rule. Players don't want to come off early. But the managers, I think, have got decisions to make and make them. Why wait to half time? That's another stupid rule. I'll wait to half time.
People are praising Potter for being undefeated. Is it a big deal that he's undefeated?
A bit of both. I'm a little bit torn because I'm a Graham Potter fan and I think it was about time he got the big job. The weird thing is if Graham Potter was the Brighton manager, there's no way he would be this defensive. So I'm watching a Chelsea side all of a sudden that a little bit defensive and a little bit stuttery.
I'm going to let you into a secret, right? I think Chelsea, for all the money they spent, this is one of the worst, least logical transfer windows ever. It's not just the players they signed, the players who stayed and they weren't able to place. Honestly, like, you could see why we should have a director of football not named Todd Bowley. I think this is the epitome.
You move Lukaku on and bring Aubameyang in. Makes no sense if you're not going to change the style.
Yeah, and then you sack the guy who wanted it all on it. Whatever.
Sticking with United, I mean, Ronaldo's statement saying he's trying to set example to the youngsters, but it's not always possible because, you know, the heat comes down and sometimes the red mist gets to you. There's not an apology in there, is there?
No, there isn't. I'll tell you what, I am okay with it. I know Cristiano Ronaldo has done this before. I think you take the good with the bad. Is it annoying for the others? I'm sure it is. Did Ten Hag have to go and punish him? 100% Ten Hag had to. And it was the right thing. But does it change your life if he posts an apology to Instagram or not?
To Man United fans, maybe. If you come out and go, do you know what? Red mist came down. I shouldn't have done it. I'm sorry. Won't happen again.
Well, that's kind of what he's implying without saying sorry. Nottingham Forest beat Liverpool 1-0, which means it's still just two league wins since August for Jurgen Klopp, though admittedly one of those was against City, so I guess we count that twice. Don, they had a lot of guys missing, sure, but is there something deeper going wrong?
How long you got, Gab? How long you got? I spoke to a Liverpool fan a couple of days back, and he said the whole feeling on the terraces is the Liverpool fans are absolutely shattered of what went on last season, Liverpool being in every competition. Then that maybe transmits a
the
little
Liverpool
bit.
Fans are. They weren't playing. I can understand
I think the mood in general as one of, we've chased City for so long, we've missed that twice by a point. We've run them close. The best Liverpool sides have seen for decades, and we can't get close to them. And then you get off to a bad start. And it is excuses, I understand it, but there's so many little dynamics. Trent's off his game. Fabinho doesn't look anywhere near the player that he's been over the years. Salah's form's completely dropped, even though he's bagged a couple of goals lately. But again, against Forest, he was very quiet. Trying to get him off the left, trying to get him closer to the middle, to try and get him more centrally. Had a poor game. Had the least touches in any single game he's ever played in, Mo Salah. So there's loads of dynamics going on. Darwin Nunez comes through the door. People are likening him with Haaland and putting him in the same bracket. He gets red carded. He takes a step back. He's trying to find his form. There's a million excuses, and they are excuses. And I should give myself a little slap for saying them, but I think they are factors.
By the way, football thing. In this game, I was shocked by the amount of chances that Liverpool had off of set pieces.
Yeah.
I don't know that... Is it just because he has too many players that Cooper can't work? And again, praise for Cooper. Looks like a nice guy. Difficult.
I mean, Van Dijk could have had the match ball.
Hat trick. It was bizarre.
It was crazy. I mean,
great save from Dean Henderson, by the way.
Great save at the end, but he should have scored the first one, probably the second one. No Karim Benzema for Real Madrid. They beat Sevilla 3-1. Wonder strike from Fede Valverde, though, Gab. I mean, what a strike.
Tremendous strike. I said, the one that impressed me more, just because I don't get excited over long range strikes the way people, you know, here in England, you know, like they do, like, oh, a goal of the season. And it's like, you know, 19 of the top 20 is somebody belting
it. So you're not going to like Yuri Tielemans' goal at the weekend then?
I love Yuri Tielemans' goal, but why I liked more the counterattack for the second goal.
Oh, okay.
Which Valverde also played a part, by the way. Like, I thought they had their chances early. Sevilla under Sampaoli just trying to hang in there.
Yeah.
And then the goals came late. But again, one of those things, they always felt they had another gear to go to. I need to review the Rodrigo at center forwards option. It's just so different from Benzema, I think, as a knock-on effect. But, you know, three big points for them. Manchester City beat Brighton 3-1 as Erling Haaland bags another two goals. Donnet, probably didn't affect the outcome. But between the dunk on Bernardo Silva penalty, which I thought was ridiculous, which the referee was correct in not giving it, and then VAR calls him back.
Mm-hmm. Did you think that was a pen or not?
No, it's not a penalty.
Do you think Bernardo Silva leaves his leg in?
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Interesting.
You disagree?
No. I'm torn, because I was on comms on the game, and I went, there's definitely contact, there's definitely a penalty. And then the more I see it, I went, ooh, is he leaving his leg in?
And on the Haaland goal, the one where he runs past everybody.
Yeah.
Okay, I know it looks cool. Look, the big man, you know, he's like
don't
like
tell me you think that's a foul on Webster.
Well, I don't. Are you allowed to just...
Yes.
Fling, why? Is it
no,
because...
No, it's the same as Lloris, Callum Wilson. It's just, as I said before, there's 22 players on the pitch.
No, it's
there's
not the same as Lloris, Callum Wilson.
I know.
It's very different.
Was he not just too strong for him?
You could say he's too strong for him. It looked to me like he shoved him out of the way. Webster's a big, strong boy, too.
Can I talk tactics from
yes.
the Derby? Because I was on the game, Gab, and it was absolutely fascinating watching the cameras panning on Guardiola, because I wouldn't say he was in a spot of bother, Guardiola, because De Gerbi went man for man, and the only player he allowed to have any time on the ball was Edison. So his tactics were correct for about 20 minutes until the 21st, when Edison played the brilliant pass. But I loved the fact that Guardiola sort of relished the tactical battle, and he looked as though he was really respecting the tactics of De Gerbi, and he had him in a little bit of trouble because they couldn't play. The crowd was starting to turn. And it was fascinating to watch Guardiola's mind thinking about tactics, which he's an absolute genius at. And then he problem solved. And then they obviously went on and win the game.
Maybe
it was a brilliant watch.
Was getting his buddy to overthink.
Yeah.
There's a serious bromance going on between those
definitely,
two.
Definitely. Good. I'm glad to see that Ousmane Dembele's back. Bagged a goal, three assists as Barca destroy Bilbao. Is he back and are they at their best possible form?
Well, I think it was really important for them to get a statement win. I thought about balance. I forget they were third in the table until very, very recently. They wrapped this up early. Confidence boost. It comes on the back of their win on Thursday night as well. That was this huge game coming up against Barcelona. Dembele is a player of moments. I think I actually liked this setup with the way they set up in this game with De Jong in midfield and Pedri a little further forward.
Fans are starting to get back on side with De Jong, aren't they, the Barca fans?
I think they need to. They need each other. Arsenal's lead in the Premier League is cut to just 2 points as they're held at Southampton. Don, I thought they started strong and then kind of faded away.
Another game that I worked on, I was watching Mikel Arteta, Gab, and I said, inside 30 minutes, he must have been so content. His team were amazing. They were creating chances. They took the lead. Nothing to report, really, apart from second half. They went a bit casual, and they allowed Southampton back in the game. All Southampton had, Gab, was long throws and corners. It's all they had.
No, they had El Yunusi, too.
Well, they did. Not scored in, I think, 28 games. And you wonder why when you see the assist that he played for Stuart Armstrong. But you can understand why, the amount of defensive work Southampton wingers have to do. But he'll be a little bit fuming. Not because they played bad, just how the game panned out, because they should have been comfortable last night. They should have been 2 or 3, 4 up. Jesus had loads of chances, and in the end they dropped a couple of points.
Is this where maybe all those Jesus haters say, like, I told you so?
I think you're looking, I have to ask the question. I know. I think you're looking at a guy, and I think it's very hard. I think you're looking at a guy that's probably leading up to the World Cup like millions of other players are, and they're probably protecting themselves a little bit. Anyway, Bayern won 2-0 away to Hoffenheim. We've won 6 of the last 7 in all comps.
This is a perfect warm-up. They've had this big clash with Barcelona on Wednesday night. And my man, Eric-Maxime Choupo-Moting, scoring again. And that was a really nice, really well-taken goal. It's not easy when the ball's coming from the right and you have that first-time right-footed finish. Much love to him. And I think that De Ligt and Upamecano keep building chemistry at the back, and I think that's really important too. Inter get a very lucky winner in minute 95 away to Fiorentina to take all 3 points. But Dom, the home side are very angry. They feel Fede Di Marco should have seen red and that it was never a penalty when Terracciano brought down Lautaro Martinez. I'm going to ask you about those, but I want to ask you first about the winner, because it's minute 95.
Yeah.
And they square the ball. Venuti does this as a center back, running back towards your own goal.
Yeah.
It's not wrong to try and just clear it out the side, right?
Sort of, because you've got to check your vision, check your peripheral, see who's there. In worst case scenario, kick it out for a corner. Back pass wasn't really on because he was too close. But in the end, it's outrageous.
In the end, the ball hits, like, I think it hits Mkhitaryan just below the knee and goes in the back. But that is a cruel. That's cruel, no?
It's cruel because it's poor. It's bad. And anyway, on the Lautaro Martinez one, I thought that was definitely a penalty.
And even though Terracciano gets the ball?
I think it's a penalty. I think it takes him a little bit.
So can we clarify a little bit that just because you get the ball doesn't mean it's not a penalty.
Exactly.
I agree with
you. It could still be a foul. The Di Marco one was interesting because watching it about 4 or 5 times, I understood by the letter of the law, because Di Marco was trying to play the ball, therefore it's not double jeopardy anymore. You get the penalty and it's not a red card. That law changed, whatever it was, two years ago. So you understand that. But the more I watch it, I'm thinking, he's a mile away from the ball.
Yeah.
He should have been sent off.
And he could have been booked, too, at a minimum.
Yeah, absolutely. Kylian Mbappe scored twice on Friday as PSG. I watched this game. He's now up to 14 goals in all comps. In his contract, that's making headlines, the Parisian revealed he's earning 72 million euros in wages plus 180 million euro signing on bonus over 3 years and a loyalty bonus of 60 million.
Yeah, so we've had people have cited figures about his contract and whatnot, you know, from the moment he extended. This is the first time that we've had kind of a major French outlet come out and say, you know, these are the terms, right? Yeah. We've had L'Equipe come out and tell us it's not a 3-year deal, even though he held up that stupid 2025 sign. It's a 2-year deal with an option, with a player option, by the way, for the third year. Mm-hmm. I mean, this kind of money, again, 72 million euros in wages, to put this in context, and I think it does matter. As you know, in England, people speak of gross wages.
Yeah.
This is a gross figure. Taxes are very high in France. So his post-tax take-home pay is only around 30-odd million. And in basic wages. The signing bonus to me is just unbelievable. 180 million spread over 3 years. I'm assuming were he to leave, he would forego the rest. I don't know. And then this weirdo loyalty bonus, which it's just such an enormous amount of money, and people will go and they'll cite Messi, they'll cite whatever. But the weird thing is again, this is a guy who, despite being very young, has already made noises about leaving, has come very close to leaving before. Yeah. This is not a Messi situation.
Question, Gab. You know, I talk about financial fair play and it absolutely blows my mind. Does the player's wages come into financial fair play?
Of course, yes. Yeah. Players' wages are a big part of it. Apparently, according to Le Parisien, I think he represents a quarter of the club's entire budget goes to pay for Mbappe. And bear in mind, they have some other highly paid players there, Neymar and Messi, that Messi fella who also scored Friday night. I don't get it. I don't understand the logic. I don't understand where they're going with it. Whatever. Aston Villa beat up Brentford 4-0 under their interim boss, somebody named Aaron Danks, who I have to say I was not familiar with. I don't remember him as a coach. I don't remember him as a player. I have no idea who he is.
Remember him now, though.
But I certainly know. I'll tell you what, Thomas Frank remembers him. I need to take you back to the decision to sack Steven Gerrard in the first place. Mm-hmm. Was it the right thing to do? Villa aren't that down in the table, are they?
No, I commentated on the game, the Fulham game that he got sacked after, and it was one of them, Gab, where you could see the pain on Stevie's face. You could see it. It was the performance. It was the there's always a number that gets you the sack. It was three against Fulham, but it could have been a couple more. And it was also the goals that you concede. When you concede like rubbish goals and own goals and penalties, it's just the Villa fans were quite toxic. They were singing songs like "Get out of our club" and this, that, and the other. So therefore, put a little bit of pressure on Christian Perslow and the board to try and react, because they were creeping down into the bottom three. They were getting quite close.
And they spent a lot of money.
And if you had sold that to Christian Perslow and said, "I'll spend whatever it was, £150 million, I'll have you closer to the bottom three than the top six," then it's not a good sell. And it was one of them where I did feel for him. I think he hung his hat on Philip Coutinho because he played so well in part last season, but has not been good this season. And loads of injuries along the way. But off the back of the Fulham game, it felt like it was coming.
Yeah, Christian Perslow, not very popular among Liverpool fans. I'm assuming even less popular now.
Yeah, but I mean,
I don't think he cares. I don't think he's going on holiday.
And Liverpool fans, because I think they're desperate, aren't they, for that transition when Klopp leaves for Gerrard to be the man.
Right.
Interesting where Stevie pops up next. I wonder if he goes back to Liverpool as a 21s coach. I wonder if he takes something with England, or does he bide his time to try and get back in? I had a conversation with a pal of mine yesterday who thinks if he takes a little bit of time off, he could then potentially be the Liverpool manager. And I was like, I don't see that happening. I think you've got to take another job.
I think so too.
And prove to be a success before you get the club, the job the size of Liverpool, in my humble opinion.
No, I agree with you. Well, look, not only are you, the legendary native-born son of Liverpool, historic captain, but you'll also be replacing Klopp now.
Yeah, exactly.
You're either replacing Klopp walking away as a winner, or let's say Klopp turns to rubbish, then trying to salvage a Klopp situation, which neither of which is good.
I was putting myself into the mind of a good friend of mine, Gary McAllister, also lost a job with Stevie. And I can imagine Gary texting Stevie, "Have you seen the scoreline?" After 15 minutes, when Villa were 3-0 up, and they must be thinking, how's that happened? How can we be so bad against Fulham and so good against Brentford? Astonishing. Atletico Madrid got a big win, Gab, against Betis. Griezmann scored a couple, one of them direct from a corner. Goalkeeper?
I think definitely a goalkeeper. I'm really on both of them. I'm sorry. I love the Olympic goal, as they like to call it, when you score direct from the corner. The reality is most of the time, although there's some YouTube highlights of Diego Maradona doing it where I say, okay, yeah, nobody's getting to that. But most of the time, there's got to be a major. Have you ever played in a game where somebody scored direct from the corner?
I literally can't remember, but I know if you're going to try and score from a corner, the percentage chances, Gab, are like 1%. It's impossible.
You didn't take corners, I presume.
A little bit, but I wasn't trying to score from them.
You've never tried to bend it?
Never, ever. As a kid, yeah. And you can do it when you're a kid, when the goalkeepers are literally tiny, and you can do it. But professionally, you've got too many things to try and work on.
Yeah. I would assume your teammates probably get a little annoyed with you.
Well, exactly.
If you do it more than once or twice. Back to Manchester United, Joel Glazer was part of a Zoom call with supporters who asked him why the Glazer family took £33.6 million out of the club in dividends last year when United had their worst ever financial year, losing £150 million. Reportedly, Glazer didn't have an answer. Do you, Don? Can you explain it?
No, I've got no idea. Financially, I've got no idea how the internals work at a club like Man United or anywhere else where there's dividends and there's shares and the fans want money put back into this rebuilding.
Well, it's simple, right? You own the business. If the business has probably been, I'm going to dumb this down for people as much as possible.
For me, right? Please. Dumb it down for me.
So he owns the business. His family owns the business, right? The business is profitable. If the business is profitable at the end of the year, what happens is you take some of that profit and you can decide we're going to give it back to the shareholders and we call that dividend. It's like a profit share, right? Now, they've been taking dividends out of the club every single year, and it's been kind of controversial because they've loaded a bunch of debt onto the club and because fans say, well, no, you should just be reinvesting in the club every year, right? To do it in a year where they lose money, $115 million, and then on top of that, like, oh, I'm also going to help myself and get... this is really, really going to rankle people. And this is why I get angry when people say, like, oh, look, but they've spent more than $1 billion on the club. I'm like, it's been a freaking profitable club most of the time. You know, United fans are very good at keeping count of all the money that the Glazer family has taken out of the club in the form of dividends. I don't have a problem with people getting paid. I really don't. If you do the job. I don't know that, I mean, taking all this money, the Glazer family is saying, oh, United have been profitable all these years because of us, so we should get a dividend. If that's what you want to argue, I don't think that's right, but whatever, right?
Yeah.
But to do it when you've taken a loss.
No, that's a strange one.
It's an odd one.
Yeah.
No. I mean, they wonder why nobody likes them.
Well, exactly, yeah. Milan destroying Monza 4-1. Brahim Diaz puts on a show. Good player. He had to come off injured. Great win. But is Brahim ever going to get the consistency?
I think it's a question a lot of people are asking. You know, it's amazing because here's a guy who was, you know, a prodigy when he was 15, goes to Manchester City. Remember Brahim Diaz and Phil Foden? They were neck and neck.
Yeah.
Makes his debut. Eventually gets sold to Real Madrid. He's still a Real Madrid player. This is his third year at Milan on loan.
Yeah.
And you see glimpses of him. He looks really good when he's really good. He was really good in this game. He's the little guy who's unplayable. Yeah. But even then, Milan have insurance, right? They signed Charles de Ketelaere in case Brahim Diaz doesn't work. I mean,
you can imagine Diaz now, if he had stayed at City, you can imagine the type of player he would be. He'd be more consistent, wouldn't he? Because he's got the talent.
Because he's got better coaching.
Yeah, and better players.
You would think so, yeah. I mean, I think City were seeing him as, you know, potentially...
Maybe just didn't kick on, yeah.
A Bernardo Silva-type player, because also he's played in the wing, he's played as number 10.
Yeah.
You know, he's got kind of that trickery without necessarily having a lot of acceleration, like Bernardo Silva. But, if he turns a corner, if he plays to his talent this season, he's going to be crucial for Milan. And they need him, 100%. Of course, against Dinamo Zagreb. Leeds United lose at home to Fulham 3-2. Don, is time running out for Jesse Marsh?
It is, Gab. It is. You know, no wins in eight, losing games. They can't hold on to a lead. I was at the Palace game a couple of weeks back. Won for 45 minutes. Leeds were unreal. Like watching Brazil. They were, honestly, they were ridiculously good, like sensational. But it's the movie that you've seen before. Let in a cheap free kick, 1-1. Second half begins, folded. Lost 2-1. Same happened against Fulham. There's a fragility. It's obviously in the coaching, it's in the setup, it's in the players, it's in their attitude, it's in their confidence, they're fragile. But when you start losing on no wins in eight, you are running a risk. And again, we talked about the Villa fans, the Leeds fans were singing Bielsa's name, and he got interviewed after the game, Jesse Marsh, and he said, that really cut me. For the first time, it cut me.
Really?
Yeah.
His feelings get hurt.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're trying your best.
I thought he was some robot produced in a lab in Princeton. But I will say this, and is it that simple? Because, look, I get it. You can sing Bielsa's name. Some horrendous defending under Bielsa, too, at every club he's been at, right?
Yeah.
So there's a reason. To me, it's Jesse Marsh plays high-risk, high-reward football because that's the Red Bull way, and that's what he's done.
I think they had it more so with Bielsa. Don't you agree? I think they had more high risk with Bielsa, even though they're getting smashed like sixes and sevens off like Man United. There was more sort of high risk and more energy. And I think he's trying to temper that a little bit. He's gone away from the man-to-man marking, which had to be done because you can't do that every single game against every single opposition. But it's the fact that when you're trying to go away from Bielsa, which the Leeds fans loved, and you're still not winning games, it must be frustrating.
But a lot of the Bielsa principles are there in what he does. I mean,
the defending gap. The defending's horrendous, and that's a little bit where.
Is it individuals?
Yeah,
individual errors.
Yeah, so that's where I think it tends to get a little bit unfair when a fan criticizes a manager. When you see Robin Koch defend the way he did yesterday, when you see Luke Aylin defend the way he did yesterday, you're looking as a manager, and the camera's panned on him. I think he was more or less thinking like, "What can I do there?" Like, literally, what can you do as a manager when you give them instructions and they don't do it and you let cheap goals in and rubbish goals? You must be thinking as a manager, like, what's happening? And then you get the run of losses and the run of defeats to get you close to the sack.
I imagine they're gonna go and evaluate the situation during the World Cup, I think.
So I think the same. I think that's what they should do. I think there's so many clubs in the Premier League that are going to wait and see, and some are making decisions, some are not. I think they're all waiting to get these three games out of the way. Union Berlin, top of the table, facing Bochum, who were dead last and lost 8 out of 10 games at that point. So naturally, what happened?
So naturally, of course, they lost.
Of course they did.
Gave up a set-piece goal. They were 2-0 down at one point. Much as it's great to have you here, Jules would have loved being here and trolling our regular producer, Freddie, who's a big Union Berlin fan.
He likes a troll, doesn't he?
What is the point? Because, look, the way Union Berlin play, I'm not making fun of them, right? But this is a team that's built around directness, muscle, set pieces, a low possession. There was one game where I think they had like 18% possession through the first half, something crazy like that. Mm-hmm. You can't do this against bad sides. Or they're playing Bochum, who are a terrible team, although, yeah, you know, I think they lost like 5 or 6 of the first games of the season. And you can't play like this and think it's going to last. You know, it's one of those outperform, XG, whatever. Yeah, yeah. For it to happen against a bad team like this...
That's the worry.
Yeah, that's the worry. Brazil, as in the country, is having a runoff election in a week. Neymar has publicly endorsed one candidate, Jair Bolsonaro, while Brazil coach Tite has gone so far as to say that if he comes home with the World Cup and Bolsonaro is reelected, he won't meet with the president. Don, so I know you're an expert on Brazilian politics.
So naturally you come to me.
Not everybody knows about your PhD in political science. No, I'm kidding. No, I just want to know, very simple, right?
Go on.
From a player's perspective, yeah, just two things.
Yeah.
One is, I think I'm right in saying that generally we're not accustomed to professional footballers talking about politics.
100%.
Ever.
Yeah.
And second, you're not just talking about politics, but they're taking diametrically opposed views within the same team on the eve of a World Cup. To me, this is, I'm making an analogy to somebody, and I'll make an NFL analogy for our friends across. Remember a few years ago when Tom Brady was still with the Patriots?
Yeah.
This is like a month before the Super Bowl or a month before the playoffs start. You know, Belichick saying, oh, if Trump gets elected, I'm not going to the White House. And Brady saying, oh, no, I'm going to go out and campaign for Trump. Right, Joe, your star player and your coach. Again, they didn't do that. I'm not getting into that. But, right, it's weird, isn't it?
Very weird. Very weird.
Or not weird. It's difficult to understand side of the pond.
Well, absolutely. I mean, politics and football, in my opinion, doesn't mix. But once you get a player like Neymar side into one side, I was fortunate to be in the car last night and I was listening to this debate on radio. And one of the journalists said about the actions that he's made, Neymar, he's actually alienated so many other people from Brazil. They're not happy with Neymar leading into a World Cup.
But equally,
I don't know how that dynamic
is the
works.
Coach Chicha doing the same thing as well by saying, idea, like, I don't like this guy. If he gets elected, do you have a duty to say, like, I don't care whether you have to respect the fact
idea
that he's, you know, it's, but as a player, as a teammate, it's not necessary.
No, it's not helpful. 100% it's not necessary, but you, how do you stop someone like Neymar having that opinion? I don't know. Surely that's on the management, surely. It's not for a player in a dressing room to say to someone, listen, you can't.
Well, he's his own guy, right?
Well, yeah. So that's why you need guidance from the manager.
What I think is going to be, just because I want to keep this on football, but when the World Cup comes back around, seeing how, and then I'll meet up in Doha, and, you know, it's what, like 3 weeks from now, you know, time flies.
But you can imagine the rhetoric. You imagine the story. If Neymar and Brazil crash out early, he's going to get hammered.
Is this going to be blamed one way or the other?
100% it will.
It's an interesting one.
Yeah. Dortmund beat Stuttgart 5-0. Gio Reyna makes his first start of the season. Gab, so much inconsistency, but they look really good.
Yeah, I think it's his first league start of the season. But he played really well. I think he played some Champions League. Dortmund turned in a 90-minute performance, which is not something we often see. Yes. All right, Jude Bellingham was tremendous, as once again. Süle played it right back as the... It's funny. He's kind of always the German Dan Byrne, you're going to say, right?
There you go.
But I thought he was solid. I think you still need more from Adeyemi. But it's encouraging to actually see them play well for 90 minutes, not self-destruct. You still have Moukoko up front. And it's interesting with Reyna, even though he's only 19 years old, I think this is a team that needs some kind of leadership, right? Yeah. And until Marco Royce is injured, and even then, obviously, he's not getting any younger. Bellingham's delivering it, despite being very young. I think if Reyna's fit for a while, he has the charisma and the personality to deliver it.
Yeah.
I think it's really important because, you know, they still need to get up there and then kind of make sure they're in the top four. They've got a big Champions League week coming up as well. Mm-hmm. So this is really, really impressive, I think, from Terzic. We have another installment in the successful series where games are delayed because goals are too big or too small. So we saw this happen in a Women's Champions League game. Yeah. We saw it happen here in England at Wigan. Yeah. We saw it happen some other place in the lower divisions. This past weekend, it happened in the Portuguese Women's League. When Benfica played something called, I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, Lank Vila Verdense, I was delayed because the goal was too big. It had to be adjusted. Now, I have to say, honestly, before this year, I had never heard of top-level football matches being delayed because goals were too small or too big.
Never heard of it.
Now there's an epidemic, but you played the game at a high level. Why is it that goals are starting to shrink or grow or whatever?
How do you explain it? I can't explain it.
Is this the first year where we've actually started measuring goals?
I don't know. It's bizarre.
This goal was apparently 4 centimeters too big. Now, 4 centimeters, if you think in inches, it's nearly 2 inches. That's not insignificant. In fact, you could probably look at it and tell.
But how are they changing? How are the goal size changing? You get them from one area of the pitch. You put them there. Are they too small or too big?
It depends. Some are too small.
If
some are
too
small,
big. You might be able to think, well, something in the turf is eroding underneath, so they've dropped down.
But what if they're growing?
I don't know.
What if the pitch is being watered? I honestly don't know. I'd love to think that maybe, you know, there's some anarchist collective out there that says, you know what? You know, I am.
Like someone started something. They're adding a little bit on just for the.
Everybody's banter. Going just messing. Yeah. With the goals, and could be your club next.
Atalanta lose second spot, Gab, in the league as they're beaten at home by Lazio. Lazio playing well. Does this mean no fairy tale for Gasperini?
No fairy tale 2.0 for Gasperini, 2.0, not the first one.
Sorry.
It looked that way, and you know, you almost, I mean, you know, they were second in the league, they'd had all these injuries, they're playing differently because they're playing definitely more defensively than they did.
I wonder why he's never on, and I'll say this loosely, I wonder why Gasperini's never on the big club's radar.
Because he's been at the big club before and it didn't work out, and he's somebody who has a reputation as not being an easy person to work with. That people have asked me this a million times. Yeah. That's the reason people, he's just one of those coaches who's successful.
Stubborn?
Yeah, most coaches are, right? And people just don't like him. You know, it's a bit like, I don't know, Neil Warnock.
Right.
He's always very nice to me, but there are a lot of people who don't like him, right?
Marmite.
Alan Pardew, another one, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, but they have achieved things in the game, right?
Yeah.
But by the way, Lazio, we got to show some love for Sarri because Ciro Immobile is out. He's not going to be back until 2023. You thought, all right, they're all just going to collapse without him. Felipe Anderson played up front and it worked. I think they have a real player in Zaccagni out on the wing. Yeah. And they're top four, which is, I think, beyond anybody's expectations.
Absolutely.
A wild one in Augsburg, Don, as the home side go 3-0 up after 64 minutes. only to concede three times, including twice in the last 2 minutes. Obviously, this was against Leipzig. How does this happen? You ever been involved in anything like that?
Yeah, but I feel as though this is a German thing. Not necessarily it's just Germany, but...
Have a crazy ending.
But every time I see a team that's winning 3-0, normally Dortmund, they blow it. Isn't it normally? And then you go in... What happens? What happens in that scenario, Gab?
They had somebody sent off at minute 65, but even then, I expect 10 men to be able to not concede three goals in 25 minutes.
That's why it's a freak. But it happens, I don't know, once every couple of seasons, more so in Germany. And what happens is, Gab, when you're in that scenario, if you're Augsburg and you're winning 3-0, you are so comfortable in the game, and then you lose one and you go, that's not the end of the world. 3-1, we've still got time on the clock. And then you lose the second one to 3-2, and it's panic stations.
You never see
a team then go and win 4-2, do you?
No.
It's always at 3-2. It's always the 3-3.
They were 60 seconds apart, the goalkeeper 3-2 and the equalizer.
Yeah, because it's panic stations.
Yeah, and by the way, from Leipzig's perspective, of course, their patron, the guy who built the Red Bull Empire, Mateschitz, passing away this weekend. Condolences to him and his family. You know, if you want to get poetic about it, I like to think he looked down at 3-0 down and said, oh, look, or maybe looked up, some people might say, and said, oh, you know, let's get this equalizer. So let's bring this home.
So the FIFA president, Giovanni Infantino, has slammed broadcaster for submitting lowball bids for the 2023 Women's World Cup in Australia. He says some are offering 1% of what men's football world rights bring in. Does that make any sense?
So I think this is really interesting, and this is one situation where I'm going to side a little bit with FIFA and slam broadcasters, even though we work for one.
Yeah.
Not all of them, right? But basically, so historically, the men's and women's rights were – FIFA sold the rights together for all the FIFA events, men's, women's, under 20s, under 17s, and whatever. And that is part of the reason why – For example, the prize money at World Cups for women was always so much less than it was for men, right? Because it was impossible to quantify how much are they actually bringing in.
Yeah.
So this is the first time that they're actually selling them independently. And what we saw in 2019, and Infantino came out and said that, they said, well, the men's audience for World Cup games is about four times the women's audience. The audience for men's World Cup is about four times the audience for the women's World Cup. So if the men's World Cup generates whatever it is, $6.5 billion,
yeah.
If the women's World Cup is a quarter of that, I expect it to generate a quarter of that, right? Yeah. Yeah. And we know that women's competitions do really well on television, the Euros as well. They get high ratings, right? Yeah. And apparently people are not offering a lot of money. They're offering very low bids for these rights. Now, I think part of it is that it's being played in Australia, which, you know, maybe TV-friendly times in Australia and Japan, but, you know, it kind of sucks if you're in the rest of the world because they'll be in the middle of the night in North America or early morning or whatever, and even in Europe. I mean, what is it, like 9 hours with Australia, right? That said, you're expecting more money. I personally think it's good that FIFA are holding out and calling them for account. I mean, Infantino went so far as to say, you know, you in the media, you guys slam FIFA for not doing enough for women's football, especially some of you broadcasters. All right, open your wallet and buy these freaking rights.
Which
tell
is
us.
Fair argument.
Which I don't see how they can be, you know, the men's rights can be worth 100 times the women's rights, even with the time
which
difference.
Which is a fair argument to have, I suppose.
I think so. I'm glad they're hanging in there. I mean, ultimately, I think the goal has to be to grow the women's game, let the women's game kind of thing stand on its own two legs and fully exploit it. You've got a ton of sponsors who are willing to do it. They deliver the high ratings before in 2019.
Yeah.
I don't think this whole, like, you know, time shift middle of the night thing, I don't think that explains this difference.
Mm.
Franck Ribéry announces retirement from football at age 39. Don, your memories?
Oh, what a player. Bayern, I think is the club that I think stands out for me, where I think he was at his peak, him and Iron Robin. I think when you look at...
Robbery.
When you look at them two, you just think like they were unplayable, weren't they? Like his balance, his skill, different positions.
He's one of those wingers who, I guess it was because of his scar and the way he looked. he had this like whole badass persona. Like, he's a tough guy winger. He's not one of those like flighty wingers. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I just thought he was amazing. I thought everything about him, Gab. I think, like, as players go, I think he's one of them, which it'll be ridiculously unfair when you move on and people remember Messi and Ronaldo in like 15, 20 years' time. He might not even come into people's memories, Ribery, but he should.
No, he definitely should.
I think
should.
He was an outrageous player.
Nearly won a Ballon d'Or as well.
There you go. Villarreal beat Almeria 2-1, Gab, but I want to ask you about Alex Buena.
Baena. So he scores, and this caused a lot of controversy. He was sent off because he was wearing a T-shirt underneath his shirt, and he lifts it up to display a message.
Right.
And so there's rules against political messages. There's rules, I guess, against removing your shirt, although I don't even think he fully removed it. But it was a tribute to former Villarreal vice president José Manuel Llaneza, who had passed away a couple of days earlier. He's a guy who had kind of helped build Villarreal into a Liga powerhouse from a sleepy third, fourth division club. And second yellow, so he's off. I hate it when people bring up common sense, and I'm like, there's rules. But in this case, come on, ¿qué pasa? Common sense, right?
Yeah.
It's just silly.
I mean, just the ref, go and have a word in his ear.
Yeah, you want to fine him afterwards, fine him. But there's no reason to send him on.
Ridiculous.
Anyway, Don, that brings us to an end. Thank you for such a tip-top job.
Loved it.
Replacing Jules. But don't worry, Jules fans. Jules will be back on Thursday. We'll be talking some Champions League. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.